It's called The Science of Channeling with Helena Wahbe. We are going to take your calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, The Science of Channeling. And where do people get the book, Helena?
They can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any of your large booksellers.
Super. And you've got another book out too, don't you, that you wrote a couple years ago called The Free to Be Me?
That's right. That was a memoir written by myself and my mother about intergenerational healing.
And your mother, so she's got this ability too, huh?
Yes, she has this trans-channeling ability, as did my grandmother. And it's, you know, pretty much every single member of my mother's family has some sort of channeling ability, whether it's channeling artistic talent or something called automatic writing or trance channeling. Quite fascinating.
We actually
just finished a study on the genetics of channeling, because you had asked me, you know, what makes a channeler a channeler?
Right.
And we know that anecdotally, it runs in families. And so we were very curious to see if there was actually a genetic component that we might be able to see. So we looked at high-functioning psychics and controls that were matched by age and gender and race, and we found a unique difference in the non-coding region of the DNA. And what was so fascinating about this part of the DNA is that it was actually the wild type, or basically the original configuration of that part of the DNA in the psychics, and the controls was a mutation. So that kind of lends support to this notion that we're all kind of born with this ability to channel, and yet somehow it's shifted or changed in some way.
What creates a good channeler? What does that?
I think that believing that you can channel. So there's this just belief that you can do it, that it's possible. Having a clear intention that you want to channel. And then practice actually doing it regularly. And I found that, you know, those three things in almost everyone allows them to be able to develop their channeling ability pretty easily.
Do you find that you have to be positive when you're doing this, as opposed to somebody with any negativity?
So that's a really great question, because could we, you know, we see movies with superheroes and the bad, you know, bad guy that's using these powers for destructive purposes. I think they can be used in a negative way, and that having a clear positive intention supports it to happen more easily. Is there some sort of block to using telepathy, say, if you have some negative intent? I guess my hope would be that it wouldn't work as well. And I don't see, you know, in our, like, let's say 600 records that we got from people about their experiences, there were only two or three people that had any sort of negative intention around it. But this brings up a really important point, because there's such fear and taboo around these topics.
Sure.
And I think that fear might be coming from the what if. So what if anything that I intended actually came through, right? So you think about road rage, or, you know, being angry at someone. Oh, I wish they'd just, you know, blah, blah. If that actually really happened, it would be devastating, right? So some people believe that there's, you know, some blocking humanity from their full channeling potential, because we aren't really mature enough to be able to handle it, that our intentions would kind of blow up the planet if we actually had our full channeling capacity unleashed.
Do Do you have to be specifically religious to be able to do this?
No, you don't. In fact, most of the surveys are showing that people are more spiritual but not religious now. So there is a decline in traditional religious affiliations and an increase in spiritual but not religious. And we're seeing that reflected in our surveys as well. And others have done global surveys around that.
Let's go to Stephen in Los Angeles to get us started on the wildcard line. Hi, Stephen.
Oh, hi, George. I love the show.
Thank you.
So I have a crazy story. I still don't know what to make sense of it. So I worked late one night till like 11 p.m., and so I'm headed towards my car in the back of the facility, and I get in my vehicle, and I'm pulling out of my engine on, and I'm going towards the alley, and all of a sudden, my phone calls me, 911, flashing with a siren. And I stopped my car, and I, what the hell is this? And at that same moment, a car going like 45 miles an hour went through the alley.
Wow.
And had a head-on collision with me.
Oh, the big question is, who made that phone call, Helena?
That is such a great story. Thank you so much. You know, we actually have a live archive on our website where people can actually include these anecdotes into our database. So I invite you to add that to it. So that's a great, another example of this protective guidance that people get, whether it's from your higher self or your guardian angel. And there's a whole field of parapsychology that looks at supposed discarnate beings affecting technology, instrumental communication, ITC, is looking at how, you know, these beings can supposedly affect, you know, our phones, our computers, can actually create audio messages. So it's quite fascinating.
Thank you so much for sharing that story.
Go ahead.
Maybe it was a dearly departed loved one who saved his life.
Right. So, you know, there's the whole guardian angel or ancestral helper, who knows, the guardian team. In the spiritualist tradition, they believe that everyone is born with a guide team that supports them in their life. I think it's like five. They have a magic number of five guides that help them, not just one guardian angel, but a whole team of guides that support the person in their life. And so perhaps we can just say, what if one of those guide teams was able to affect the phone, create this call,
yep,
doesn't move forward, saves the life. And I don't know, that is a deep comfort to think that that could be true.
Well, and how many times have we heard that phones ring at the moment of death of a loved one who's miles away from you, but you get a strange phone call, nobody's there, and then you find out that that person died at about that same time.
Absolutely. And there's a whole field now. I mean, obviously, we've been studying this for a very long time, but more recently, they've coined a term called after-death communication, or ADCs.
Yes.
And, you know, this shows up as telephone calls, even emails coming through, you know, pictures falling off the wall, radios coming on. There's just a huge smell. People get unique smells that come up, are actually seeing apparitions as well. And, you know, it's so hard to explain this stuff with our traditional five senses in a materialistic paradigm view. They're just completely unexplainable. And so this concept that our consciousness could be non-local allows a little bit more room to be able to explain some of these things.
Let's go to Eric, truck driving in Indiana. Hello there, Eric.
Hello, George, my friend. How are you doing today?
Wonderful. Thank you.
You know, I have nothing negative to say about this program or your guest that's on that you have on the air. You have such a great guest, and this is a plus for the whole world to listen to, I tell you.
Thank you.
My question is that I've got a couple experiences I'd like to discuss, but you know, I know we're short on time and stuff, but what had happened was that, it was my mother-in-law. She was in a nursing home, and my father-in-law was sitting there. They're all expecting her to pass on, you know. And he's sitting there, and he told me this. He told me and my wife this, that when she died, when she took her last breath, he said it felt like something just went through him when she took her last breath. Now, what would that be?
Have you heard of anything like that, Helena?
There is a whole field of study called deathbed visitations or visions, and it is an incredibly common experience. They have done surveys of nurses and hospital staff and loved ones of people who are in hospice and going to pass with experiences similar to what you just described, with seeing apparitions, with the person who's about to pass, you know, saying, oh, look, there's Uncle Joe. He's come for me. This is not a unique story, although I hear that it's unique for you. And so there's a bunch of research around deathbed visions and visitations that are similar to what you've described.
Eric, thank you. Next up, we'll go to Jeremy in North Dakota. You're going to hear quite a story here, Helena. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Hello, George and Helena.
Hi there.
I want to know first if my 2.5 months in a coma was channeling.
I don't think so. What do you think, Helena?
Well, I don't know. If you were in a coma and your body was not moving, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I was suffering from, I was in a coma from a tragic auto accident I had over 17 years ago, and I was in the coma for 2.5 months, and when I woke up, I remember a dream or vision I had in the coma. I was walking up the mountain on a path with my now ex-wife, and the boulders started falling down from the top of the mountain, and I pushed her into a crevice, and then boulders knocked me off the cliff, and as I was falling, I heard a voice from the sky that said, "You must return. Your tasks are not done yet."
And back you came.
Yeah, that sounds more like a near-death experience that is going to be great for the next speaker today.
Exactly. And Jeremy, let me ask you this. Were you married at the time, or was she your ex when you were in the coma?
I was married at the time.
Okay, so after you came out of the coma, that's when things broke up?
Yeah, she came to the conclusion that the man she married died in the accident.
And
went out and had an affair.
Sorry to hear that. Okay. Yeah, that does not sound like a channeling, Helena.
No. Right.
How do you distinguish the difference, as you just did?
Well, let's consider a different scenario. So let's say that this gentleman, you know, went into a coma, and then all of a sudden his body arose and started moving and talking and speaking in a different language or doing things. And yet, you know, he was not aware of that. And then, you know, how many hours later came back and it was like, oh my goodness, you were doing this, you were doing that. And he said, I have no recollection of that. So that would be an example of trance channeling.
Interesting. Mozart, when he was a little boy, played incredible music. I mean, just genius music. Is it conceivable that he was channeling, maybe didn't even know it, and was channeling some other great musician of his day?
Absolutely. And there's been some fascinating cases of creativity like that. There are a couple mediums in Brazil that believe that they're channeling artistic masters and will produce incredible paintings in minutes, and even painting one with one hand and one with the other hand and creating these masterpieces. It's incredible.
It truly is. It's truly remarkable indeed. We're talking about the science of channeling, why you should trust your intuition and embrace the force that connects us all. Tell me about that subtitle. That's very important.
Yes. So trusting your intuition is really about this going within and accessing this noetic wisdom. And so I've said this before, but I'll say it again. We all have the capacity to tap into our intuition, and trusting that allows that to really blossom and support you. Embracing the force that connects us all is really about that fundamental consciousness, the big C consciousness that I was sharing about as this fundamental level of reality. And those two pieces, I think, are really essential to support this work around channeling in terms of the research and being able to study it, and also the direct experience of it.
Since you've done this, would you say that your channeling abilities have gotten better?
Absolutely. I've tried many different types of channeling. Like I mentioned earlier, you know, I think my strongest noetic signature is embodied, which means I get goosebumps. I get a felt sense. I can feel other people's emotions. It's, you know, sometimes hard for me to be in a big crowd because of all the emotions around me. And so.
But you're picking that up, though, from the people who are alive around you, right?
That's right. And so the people, so through this work, I have honed that and been able to kind of beef up the positive aspects of it and tone down the perhaps more uncomfortable aspects of it. So I, you know, for most of my life, had never done trance channeling. I had these kind of other ways mm-hmm. of knowingness, if you will. And when I started at IONS and I started doing studies of trance channelers, I was really curious to see if I could do it myself. And of course, my mother and grandmother had done it. So I thought, if there's some genetic piece, then maybe I'm wired to be able to do it also. So I met some teachers who teach trance channeling, and I also connected with a researcher in Italy, Patrizio Trisolti, who just developed a hypnosis program to teach people, completely naive people, how to trance channel. I said, okay, I'm going to be a N of one and learn how to do this. And I went through this, you know, I think it was 6 sessions, and then was able to learn how to trance channel.
All right, tell us more about that when we come back. That fascinates me, a hypnosis program to channel. And then we'll take final calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, Mariel Ford Clark joins us. Where After is the name of her work. Where do our loved ones go after they die? Fascinating discussion. So we'll continue with this genre when we come back later on tonight on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, back with Helena Wahbe in the science of channeling. Helena, tell us now about this hypnosis program you went through and how it worked.
Yes, so it was with a hypnotist who guided me through about 6 sessions. And the first sessions were, you know, getting comfortable, relaxation, creating safe space. And then moving into out-of-body, having an out-of-body experience, which was quite fascinating. We set out some objects on top of bookshelves in our laboratory that I, you know, in quotes, went to during my out-of-body experience and was able to describe some of those, which was quite incredible to me. I also described, you know, objects in my research assistant's house, which I'd never been to before. Not in incredible detail, but like colors and shape and general content. So we had a few sessions of that, and then finally moved to the actual trance channeling session. Like I mentioned before, you know, through the hypnosis, got into an altered state of consciousness, very, very relaxed. We set the intention that I would be safe and protected, and only the highest, you know, discarnate beings, if there were any, would be communicating with me, through me. And then lo and behold, I started speaking. My words started coming out of my mouth without me directing that. And that's what trans channeling was like. And I got to experience it firsthand. It's the most incredibly bizarre experience, and I wish everyone could experience it firsthand, to be sort of this observer and have words coming out of your mouth, not knowing what is going to come out next. And this experience of being this vehicle, if you will, for whether it's my higher self or another being or who knows, to actually communicate with my voice.
Now, how do we know people who channel aren't hallucinating or they're having some, you know, mental issues? How do we know they're not?
I'm so glad you brought that up, because that's such an important issue. And, you know, I think that's why many people are afraid to share about it, because they don't want to be labeled as crazy or having some sort of mental health problem. So there's a few ways to know. I wouldn't say no, but there's a few pointers to whether the channeling experiences that you're having are helpful, supportive channeling versus something that would be useful for you to get help from a mental health professional. So part of that is the strength and the frequency and how it's affecting your daily life. So if you're getting such intense phenomenon and experience that you're not able to actually function in your daily life, that's a red flag to reach out for help. Also, if it is having a negative impact on your life, or it is reducing your quality of life in some way. Most helpful channeling is positive, is conscious, is consensual, is also has a improves people's quality of life. There's been numerous studies showing that there is benefit to channeling phenomenon in people's life. So if that's not true for you, then I would invite you to reach out to mental health professionals, to spiritual advisors, to get some support for you.
All right, let's go to the phones now. This segment's going to fly by. Bill in Los Angeles. Hey, Bill, go ahead.
Oh, hi, George. Helena, I was wondering if you or how you can scientifically confirm the authenticity of a channeled voice. For example, let me make this perfectly clear. I buried the Roswell aliens under the White House. Was it me or Richard?
That's great. So we did a really cool study with trans channelers where we had them come to the lab. We hooked them up to EEG and EKG and all these physiological measures, and also recorded their voices. And then we had them go in and out of trans channeling every 5 minutes and looked at that data for the channeling versus the non-channeling. We didn't see any difference in the physiology, but we did see a difference in their voices. So we had them read a story when they're in the channeling state versus when they were in the non-channeling state. And there were changes in the frequency and the vibration and et cetera of the channeler's voice. And so the point you're making is, hey, they could just make that up. That's absolutely true. And so you really have to ask, what would be the motivation for them to do that? The other thing is around the stark difference and the richness of the personalities and the variety of the personalities that, say, come through mediums, it's incredibly remarkable. And in terms of the skills that they put forth, and you say, okay, it could be a really talented actor, actress. Yes, that's true, but they would have to be so exceptional, more exceptional than we see in our world today, if they were just acting.
Does the demons or the devils get involved in any of this?
Thankfully, I have not had any personal experience around that, and I haven't seen a whole lot of it in research. I mean, I mentioned this, you know, non-consensual possession, which there are a few cases of that that I've read about. And I, you know, maybe it's my own personal biases. I just don't even want to go there. You know, it just brings
I don't blame you.
Bag of worms in terms of religion. And so, yeah, I don't go there.
Let's go west of the Rockies. Kathy's with us in Lacey, Washington. Hello, Kathy.
Hi. Well, good evening, George and Helena.
Hi.
Hi. I wanted to know, in any of the experiences that you've had, if you have ever channeled somebody that you know who's alive, if you've channeled, been able to channel their highest self and getting a message to the person to help them.
Give us an example, Kath.
Well, I have had a friend who drinks too much, and
okay,
I felt like I was getting the person, the part of them that he killed off with the alcohol and the brain cells, that maybe they were on the other side and that they were like this, the highest self or their best self or their best part of them was speaking to me. And
well, that's interesting.
That,
all right. Can you channel somebody like that, Helena? Can you channel someone who's alive?
Yeah, so I would say that would not be a case of trance channeling, but perhaps clairvoyance or claircognizance. You're picking up this information about this other person. And so obviously we can't make people change.
Right, or telepathy.
Or telepathy, right. So you could say, hey, are you willing for me to just give you this information? And depending on their openness of channeling in general, you don't even have to tell them how you received it. And just say, hey, here's the information that I got, and do with it as you will. And if you want me to support you, let me know. And then it's just in their court.
Let's go to Joe in Idaho. Welcome to the program, Joseph. Go ahead.
Hi. So I kind of have a story about, like, negative channeling.
Okay.
So when I was in school, I had this kid sitting behind me, and he was annoying me. I turned around and I told him, you know what? Then you're going to break your arm. Well, next week he came back to school in a cast because he was bull riding and broke his arm.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
And then he you know, was annoying me again, and I told him, you know what, your truck's going to break down. And next week he told me, yeah, I was out mudding and my axle broke.
Jeez.
Wow.
And so, and, you know, he was doing it again, and I turned around, and I go, you know what? And then he goes, whoa, okay, no more, I won't do it again.
No more, yeah, he's taken care of.
Well, my invitation to you would be to really pay attention to your thoughts and intentions, because perhaps for whatever reason, you have an affinity for mind over matter, and you could perhaps explore that in a way that might support you in your life.
Is that is
negative against other people?
Is it channeling, or is he just very, very precognitive?
Yes, it could be that as well. He's just sensing the future.
And he's good at it, too. Remind us never to get on your bad side, Joe, to be
right.
Sure. Let's go to Alfonso in San Diego. Welcome to the program. Hi, Alfonso.
How you doing, Ari and Hannah? How you doing? Okay.
Good.
I had this unusual experience. I was sitting at a bus stop looking at San Diego Bay, and I had like a video type of movie, and it showed that it was going to be a catastrophic event about radiation. There was a radiation leak on one of the aircraft carriers, but later on in time, means 5 years passed by, something like that, something warned me that something was going to come up. Guess what it was? It was Hiroshima from the earthquake that was going to bring radiation into the San Diego Bay.
Well, Fukushima. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Fukushima.
Yes. Now, is that part of what you're talking about? Looking at your intuition and so forth?
It doesn't sound like channeling, Helena. Go ahead.
No, well, like I mentioned, George, you know, I'm using a really broad definition of channeling.
Yes.
So that would fit for precognition. So knowing the future, and there have been numerous studies of that in the laboratory. People can replicate that. We also have something called presentiment, where people's bodies know the future before their minds even know. So this is a, you know, one of the more well-studied channeling phenomenon that we've done in the lab. So yes, what you've described could be called precognition, which is under this larger umbrella of channeling. And just to clarify, the trans-channeling is that specific type where, you know, the incarnate being speaks through the person. But that's just one subtype. I know it gets confusing because it's the same word, but...
Does everyone put the precognition of channeling under that broader umbrella, or just you?
Just me. So they might call that psi or psychic or ESP. And I'm calling that all channeling or noetic wisdom or intuition. And it's challenging this field because we get so stuck on the terms, you know, and it's yet it's this phenomenon that we all experience. And then we try to give it a name and put it into a box, but it's all the underlying aspect of it is this non-local consciousness, this big C consciousness that we're more than our brain, we're more than our physical body. Our awareness expands beyond our traditional five senses to know things beyond that and to affect things beyond that, beyond time and space.
Let's go to Houston, Texas. Michael's with us, first-time caller. Hey, Michael, let's squeeze you in here. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you so much, George and Helena. I have, well, my mother passed away in 1993 when I was 9 years old.
Oh, geez.
Cervical cancer. Mm-hmm. And through the years, I have had contact through her. One time I had a dream where we were all going to go on a trip. It was her, me, and my aunt. My aunt was, like, standing in the way, and I couldn't see my mother's face. So I asked my aunt to move, but I could see my mother's face, but it was, like, kind of blurred out, but I could tell it was her. And she looked just like she did, like, back in the 1990s, same haircut, same everything. And but her face was kind of blurred out, but I could kind of see that it was her. But then once we hugged and embraced, like, I felt like such an overwhelming amount of love, like nothing I've ever felt here. It was so overwhelming and powerful. I had to, like, jolt myself and, like, wake myself up because, like, my body couldn't take what I was experiencing. And all throughout, like, the early 2000s for about 10 years straight, I would be in a room and then I would hear, like, a voice whisper my name. Nobody calls me Michael but her. Everybody else calls me Mike. But every other day I would hear that voice whispering my name. It was neither male or female. It was just like a whisper. I didn't know what telepathy was back then. At that time I lived in Mississippi and Tennessee, but now I live in Houston. And when I moved to Houston back in 2012, the telepathy stopped. I know it was her trying to communicate with me, but I just don't know why I stopped when I moved here, or what do you guys think about what I've just said?
Now, that sounds like a perfect example of channeling, Helena.
Yes, because, you know, it's contact with the dead. He's communicating potentially with his mother. And, you know, there's a lot of work around that, especially around how it supports people move through grief and affects them positively. Julie Beischel at the Winbridge Institute has been doing a number of studies of that using mediumship and looking at people's experiences of after-death communication to support them. So that's incredible.
Wonderful job. The name of the book, The Science of Channeling. Helena, thank you for being on the program. We really appreciate it. Up next, where do you go when you pass over?